Ladies and gentlemen, in the blue corner, standing at a sleek 5'11", 245 pounds, the tumultuous tempest of technique, Thomas Lilly. And in the red corner, at a curvaceous 5'11", 315 pounds, the jovial juggernaut of judgment, John Cheryl Sheridan. A meeting of the masters of mastication. Turn your attention as they delve deep into all things lifting and more. This is Peak Speak.
Yeah. And we're back. Another episode of Peak Speak. Today we're talking about coronavirus. I honestly have no idea about anything to do with coronavirus. Don't listen to the radio, don't watch the news, just see Facebook, and all I see is something about toilet paper, and I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Someone asked me what we're going to do about it at the gym. I was like, I don't know.
Nothing?
I hadn't thought about that. But then, having said that, at the start of summer, I hadn't thought about what I was going to do when the air quality in my gym was so bad that I couldn't possibly let people train. So, you know, learn something new every day.
Yeah. When people ask me stuff like that, the first thing I think is, oh shit, I own a business. I got to think about other people at some stage. This is weird.
Yeah, definitely.
I just want to also take the time and use the platform that I've been so blessed to have. I don't know about you, but on Facebook, basically if someone friend requests me and looks like they're somehow involved in powerlifting in some way, shape or form, or have a certain number of mutual friends, I just accept. Don't care who they are. Never met them, don't know them, because I don't use Facebook as a personal thing. It's like a business platform for me, right?
Yeah.
So I just want to wish Nestor Gonzalez a happy 50th birthday. He goes by the nickname of Cha-Cha, and he appears to be in Venezuela. So
perfect.
Happy birthday, Nestor.
Great. What a good way to start a podcast. How wholesome.
Exactly.
Shh. My dog is... That's Abel whinging about being locked in the office.
Give him a tray.
I forgot I had treats. I don't think you really want the sound of dogs chewing treats in the background of this. There's a few videos in my exercise library for the gym where I recorded them where I'd brought the dogs to the gym and then had made the mistake of giving the dogs bones to chew on. So if you listen closely in the background, you can hear this like of teeth grinding on dog bones.
It's weird. I would happily murder another human being for eating slightly too loud or biting their spoon, but the sound of Buddy chewing his bickies makes me so happy. I don't get it.
You're a soft and emotional human somewhere deep inside that robot exterior of yours.
Yeah, only when it relates to Buddy or other animals for that matter.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. What's going on?
Yeah, not a lot. Just, you know, another week. We're a few weeks out from Ladies of Lifting. It's going to be a big comp. I'm excited for that. We've got something like 70 lifters coming down.
What? That's awesome.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy. Stefan's bringing his new barbecue down, which is going to be glorious. We may or may not have someone selling craft beer. That's going to be cool.
Amazing. Stefan, this is the second time I'm calling you out on the Peak Speak podcast. Please, please come to States. Please.
He definitely asked me about entries for it the other day. So you could also encourage anyone who competes in GPC to just fucking enter your competitions early. It makes, just in general, even like it doesn't even have to be GPC. Federation wide. Let's put out a call out to all powerlifters everywhere. When you pick a comp, just fucking enter it. Don't like wait until 3 weeks before the comp and then enter. Just enter it when you decide to start training for it. It's really that simple.
The annoying thing is, like, if someone's like, oh, I didn't realize I had to do that. It's like, yeah, okay, well, we'll give you a pass this time. The annoying thing is no one's like that anymore. Everyone's been competing long enough and they're always like, yeah, I got to enter. Like, okay, so go home and spend the 3 minutes to fill out the form and fucking enter.
Yep. It's not that complex, people. My system is so smooth that you can do it all online from the comfort of your chair in the space of like 6 minutes. As long as you know how to spell your own name and you have an email address and access to someone's credit card.
What other meat director's gripes do you have?
Like, if you need your 700 friends to come into the warm-up room, I'm probably going to yell at you at some point.
See, I don't get too upset about the warm-up room. I just get really irrational anger about stuff that I shouldn't get irrationally angry about, like chalk. Why the fuck are you using chalk? Why are you putting chalk on your hands? Why do you need that? You're warming up. Save it for the big lifts. Like, but I'm sweaty. I don't care. Don't use chalk. It's like, I'm the one who's provided like 5 chalk buckets for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm the one who's filled them with chalk, but I'm angry that people are using chalk.
My favorite one is when people put chalk on the bench presses in the warm-up room. Like, and they do it before they've actually done any reps.
Yeah.
Like, man, we spent money on like high-grade motorcycle seat leather so that we could re-upholster those benches. They are the stickiest fucking things you will ever lie on. You don't need the chalk. Unless you are like some sort of sweat-filled machine, you're probably not going to need chalk on the bench.
It's so like, yeah, when people chalk the bar, it's like, do you know how nerve works? Oh my god. Like, do you understand that if it's caked with chalk, it works?
It doesn't work anymore. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that one infuriates me. People walking around the warm-up room like they own the place also infuriates me.
This is rapidly turning into the warm-up room dickhead episode that we promised we would do, but probably are never going to do.
No, it's not. I'm just talking about meat-directed gripes. Asking for competitors' lists, like 12 weeks out from a comp. Here's the thing. In reference to the point that we just made earlier, no one's fucking entered yet. And also, it doesn't actually matter that much. The one exception I provide to that is where it's like, hey, I'm trying to figure out which meet I'm doing because I'm trying to do this, you know, triple crown for GPC or whatever it is. I get that. Yeah. But for someone who is not a high level athlete who's in for a shot with that, the fucking competitors list doesn't matter.
How often do you get the novice comp? Hey, I'm thinking of entering, but I just want to know how much do I need to win?
Oh yeah.
Like, what do I need to lift a podium? Because I'm not gonna enter unless I'm gonna have a chance at winning.
Yeah, look, like, I would be lying to you if I said I don't have a pre-written response that I can copy paste in those scenarios. Because I'm a hashtag efficient hashtag entrepreneur. Yeah, that one's, but I actually enjoy that conversation because I think you can often change people's minds and get them thinking about, like, I think that's actually a really positive conversation to have. What else annoys me about running meets? Oh, people's fucking inability to put rubbish in a bin. We have a can and bottle recycling bin that is very clearly labeled cans and bottles only. We found a fucking dirty nappy in it at the last comp. That's infuriating. Otherwise, it's pretty good for the most part.
I must admit, like, I'd say about 40% of the containers that I have my lunch and dinner with when I take to the gym
are inherited
from comps. Yeah. That's the best thing, opening the fridge and like being like, fuck yeah, Mars bar, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
New container.
Yeah. Ooh, 6 monsters.
Oh, but seriously, people, if you go into a comp and you're like bringing a container of food, make it taste good. So if the meat director gets to have a taste afterwards, I'm so fucking sick of opening the fridge and being boiled like, chicken and broccoli. Here's some fucking dry ass pasta with no sauce and some like nasty ass 3-star mince that's all congealed with the fat on top. Like, come on, put some effort into your food for fuck's sake.
Oh man, you live a hard life. I don't know how you do it, to be honest.
Oh god.
Yeah, look, I don't really have many other gripes. Oh, people not understanding that parking in front of other businesses is a fucking dumb idea. We have had a few complaints over the last year from almost certainly one particular person about people parking in front of his business. And yeah, like in this scenario, people are actually just parking in marked car parks. Like, they are, there's lines on either side. It doesn't say who they're for. They're just public on the street car parks. He claimed that his people were driving past his business and not coming in because they thought it was too busy.
Being busy be a good thing?
Also, man, like, how do you know that? Show me how you measured the fact that you got a whole bunch of lost business from cars driving past who were like, oh, I'm going to turn into that fishing tackle shop. Yeah, if you're at a meet and your meet is in an industrial area, don't fucking park in front of other people's garage doors. No matter what day of the week it is, just don't park in front of other people's businesses.
Mostly because people who have a business that has a garage door are generally assholes like us that are going to get upset about it.
Yep.
But the another handy tip is if like you park in a really dumb place that you know is a dumb place and you have to ask the owner, is this okay? Is this okay to park here? No, it's not.
Yeah. Yeah, so that one's infuriating. It annoys me that I have to put on all of our comp media stuff and emails and things like that that go out in the lead up to comps, like parking information. It shouldn't be that complex, people. Like, just don't park like an asshole and you'll probably be okay. I think that's about it as far as meet director gripes go.
I've got one last one. At a meet a few meets ago that I ran, there was a guy that felt the need to not just drop his deadlifts every warm up, but literally like Eric Lillibridge throw it on the ground.
Yeah, no thanks.
It's kind of like one of those once seen you can't unsee thing. Like once you hear the crash, all you're listening for is the crash.
Yeah. Yeah, I also don't really like people who are unpleasant to judges and volunteers. That's the other thing that is a universal gripe. Like it's not that hard to say please and thank you.
For sure. For sure.
To be, you know, relatively emotionally stable about asking why you got a red light. You know.
With all this ranting, I've actually completely forgotten what we're talking about today.
Well, look, to be honest, that was a really cathartic sort of 10 minutes of just whinging about things. So I'm happy to just kind of call it there.
And people I feel can listen to it lighter. 10.
Yeah, me too. So we were going to talk about exercise progression.
Oh, yes. Now and, I recall.
Yeah, in our incredibly efficient planning meeting that we had prior to this podcast. Hey, we had an efficient planning meeting.
We mostly argued for like half an hour.
We almost made a whole episode of arguing. It was going to be great. It's on our OnlyFans account. This is why we need premium content.
I know.
We could be making bank. So we're going to talk about exercise progression and both from a framework of like teaching beginners and when do you start exercising and the factors that go into those decisions, but also then the value of different exercise choices depending on times of year and training and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause the discussion I had that sort of spurred this discussion was with someone who has experienced a fairly significant injury that kind of came out of the blue and is looking at surgery and you know not being able to do a bunch of stuff in the gym. And we were talking about getting back into things and being able to establish a base again. And I was explaining the way I think about building someone up, whether it's in a rehab scenario or in a new to the gym environment scenario. And that is to generally start with sort of static, stable movements, which are, you know, holds and holding positions and your ability to create shapes and maintain them, and then moving into more dynamic things, squatting instead of squat holds, before you start doing any of the more complex stuff. And I think that's something that maybe we don't talk about enough, that the rush to low bar back squat is maybe not the right way to approach your entry into the lifting world, regardless of what it is you're choosing to pursue as a goal. I thought we could talk about that for a while.
So let's start with that. Why do you think that the rush to a low bar back squat, for example, because of course you could replace low bar back squat with numerous exercise. Why do you think rushing to that more complex movement is a bad thing?
I wouldn't say it's a bad thing. I just think it's not for everyone.
Okay.
I think the discussion is too often framed exclusively around the assumption that you are a perfectly healthy individual with no history of movement issues or anything like that, and that you can therefore go straight to the more advanced version of it.
Yeah.
And I think for most people, from a longevity standpoint, it is better to give them like small wins that allow them to start progressing early than it is to rush to a more complex thing where maybe they're going to have to spend a bit more time learning how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's value in both, and both approaches are equally valid depending on the scenario. Mm. I just don't always feel like everyone I know and everyone I coach has to be squatting low bar within the first 3 weeks because, you know, low bar is the king. I used to believe that, but I don't anymore.
Yeah, and you know, I partially agree with what you're saying in the sense that not everyone needs to low bar squat, right?
Yeah.
And I do partially agree in the sense that we don't necessarily need to rush towards those movements. On the I feel like you can come at this from two angles. You can come at it from the angle that, okay, not everyone is going to be able to do this. Let's have a more basic progression to get them to the main thing.
Yeah.
Or you can come at it from the angle of like, this is what I want for the client. Everyone should have the physical capability to be able to do this, and I'm going to start from that thing and work backwards from there.
Yeah.
And I don't think either approach is right or wrong, provided that you're open-minded and provided that you're willing to change your ideals based on what's in front of you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I frame it like that because I remember when I first got into coaching and my approach... I was really just making things up as I went along. Like I didn't do a PT. I had very, very little experience in teaching anyone how to lift. I was really going just by what I thought was the right way to lift. And I remember jumping on the forums at the time and looking for people's progressions. I think I might have even started a thread of like, what is your way of progressing someone to be able to squat or something like that? Like, how do you teach people how to squat? Because I wasn't 100% sure where to start. And my idea was that I'm going to, you know, figure out a set of a system, a set of cues, a set of processes to go through to teach this lift. And I got answers like, okay, well, we start with like 4 weeks of body weight and goblet squatting, then move on to 4 weeks of front or safety bar squatting, then move to low bar back squatting. And I thought, what a fucking colossal waste of time if your goal is to get them to low bar back squat, to spend 8 weeks doing stuff that they might not need because they might already be able to do the thing that you want them to do. Like people really had this system of progression that that assumed that the person couldn't do something or couldn't progress to something quickly. I'm far of the opposite framework where it's like, I'm going to test and try everything I can to get them to do what either they want to do or I want them to do. Yeah. And if I can't do that, then I'll regress from there.
Yeah. And I think that's definitely how I think about it as well. I had this, a similar discussion with a guy who used to train at the gym, who's a friend of mine, who, at the time was working with the junior Raiders, I think. Mm-hmm. So a bunch of like 14 to 16-year-olds, maybe 17-year-olds. And he was talking to me about how like he was basically their S&C coach. And, you know, he'd had them all like working a really perfect goblet squat, and then they were all graduating into like a slightly more advanced version of that. And we were having basically this discussion. I said, man, the thing that I can't get away with 6 weeks of goblet squatting someone until they're goblet squatting absolutely perfectly before we put a barbell in their hands, because people fucking leave.
Yeah.
And you've got to be able to create the buy-in. And I think that's actually how I come at it in a more sort of rational way, is to describe it as setting people up for wins rather than losses. And so if that means I say, hey, have you ever squatted with a barbell before? And they go, yeah, I've like done a bit. I don't really know what I'm doing. Okay, cool. I'm just going to have you squat an empty barbell. We're going to try a few things. If it looks like, and you know, I've done this enough to know that for some people, just that first two or three reps, they can be like, okay, cool, we need to like work on some other things first and then come back to a barbell. For some people, it is as simple as like, hey, just think about this and this, and suddenly you're squatting a barbell reasonably well. That setting them up for being able to get those little wins and feel like they're improving with each set and working towards something, I think is really important early in the process, because it's about how quickly can you get people bought into the idea that they're going to do this for the next 5 years.
Yeah, that idea of wins is so important. And I see this a lot in the coach development stuff that I do when it comes to like teaching sumo you know, helping out someone out who comes to see you and they're like, oh, can you help me out? I'm trying to do this novice strongman comp in 6 weeks. And the people are just like, no, I don't do that. It's like, you don't do that? You're not willing to have a go? Like, you got to think people coming to see you for business want to see you. want to get what you know and who you work with and want to get that same sort of result. And yeah, sure, you might not be confident with that thing, but if you just write it off, or if someone says, I want to do sumo, and you're like, nah, sumo is not for you, they're just going to go to someone who is willing to have a go at it, even if that person's shit.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that idea of like creating wins for the client and showing them that they're on the right road, and not being like, no, you can't low bar squat yet. Maybe they can't do it very well, but they can have a go. And then you can talk to them about the process that's going to make that better.
Yeah,
exactly. Rather than just being like, nope, we're starting with goblet squats for 6 weeks.
And and that's the thing, is being able to frame it. Like, yeah, as long as you can put it into perspective with where they're at and what they're doing, I think that's where they're going to get the wins out of it. I think it's important to remember that as a coach, we're coaching humans first, and that humans want to do things that they enjoy. And there's an element of training that's frustrating. There's an element of training that's unpleasant and hard, but that doesn't mean it has to be miserable all the time. It should still largely be a fun and enjoyable hobby, because that's how you commit to doing something for a long time, is you enjoy the process.
That's right. I also... Sorry, were you going to keep going?
No, I don't know where I was going with that, so that's fine.
I also... This kind of ties back into my beef with the industry in terms of not having a systemized process of teaching the lifts. Because if you don't have a really defined, systematic way of approaching each lift, you can really chase your tail by running these regressions. And it does come back to the picture of stability. So I need to unpack this a little bit more to make it make sense.
Mm-hmm.
So the system that I use and the system that I go through in the coach development system is...
That was system a lot in that sentence.
I know. The process I use, which is what we cover in the coach development system, is based around the idea of biomechanical rules, which is like, you know, you're built differently to me, I'm built differently to Buddy, but we all do squat, we all do bench, we all do deadlift, and within those lifts, there's certain biomechanical rules that apply to everyone. So for example... in your practice, there's probably no one that you say, hey, don't breathe and brace. Breathing and bracing is a really bad idea for you. No, you probably teach everyone, here's how you breathe and brace, right?
Yeah.
So when it comes to the context of squats, more broadly, in all three lifts, I say that rule number one is, where does the power come from? So what muscles are producing the power that's actually going to move the weight? Rule number two is breathing and bracing. Rule number three is like, what's supporting the transfer of that power? So in squats, rule number one, where does power come from? Muscles of your legs and hips. You're only going to transfer that through a stable system. Rule number two is going to be breathing and bracing. Rule number three is what you're doing with your upper back, because that's going to support the transfer of power into the bar, right?
Yeah.
So with that model, I can then, you know, start by cueing a low bar squat really effectively and get someone to do it really quickly. Let's say I wasn't confident in that person's ability to do a low bar squat. Or for example, just recently I've had a 12-year-old girl and a 72-year-old grandmother come together to learn how to do the movements, which
that's
really cool.
That's fucking cool. Yeah. That's really great.
So, you know, with people like that, they don't physically have the ability to perform a low bar squat or to perform a high bar squat for that matter just yet. They need to, you know, build the stability, build general strength, both of them completely inexperienced with weights. If I don't have a way with my regressions of tying it back into how I'm going to teach the main lift, then I'm just wasting my time. If I'm doing goblet squats, but I'm not teaching them in the same way that I would want your hips to work mechanically for a low bar squat, then I'm just wasting my time. Because when I chuck them under the bar, the stability demands aren't going to be met. And so when you're in a less stable system, like a low bar squat, you're just going to be thrown around.
Yeah.
So it comes back to this understanding of like, what positions do you need to get into? How are you going to cue those? And what are the stability demands? How can I meet those in those regressions? If you can't meet them, if the cueing isn't the same, if the way that you're going to teach it isn't going to carry over to the main lift or to the more progress lift, you're not going to see any change. And you're not going to see any... every time you can do goblet squats for 6 weeks, maybe they get really good at goblet squats, put them under the low bar squat, and they're just where they were when you tested them on day one.
Yeah.
Like, there has to be some sort of transferability. Otherwise, you're going to be really disappointed when you go through this like regression progress process.
I think it's also almost exactly the same conversation we can have around like assistance work and off-season work and like weakness identification and stuff like that, because it's the same idea, right? If you're doing a front squat because you feel like that's going to help stabilize your core and upper back strength for a low bar back squat, then you shouldn't be doing a front squat where you fold in half every time you come out of the hole. Like, you've got to be able to make that link between the assistance exercise or that particular version of the lift that you're targeting a particular weakness in, and understand how that movement pattern then transfers back to the goal.
Mm-hmm.
And I think sometimes people are guilty of thinking often too much about the muscles of that are targeted by that particular lift, and not accounting for the fact that there are mechanical similarities that allow you to, you know, learn positions better and learn the control of those positions by just thinking about how you're doing things.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. So yeah, I think that discussion is important to have early on, both from both sides of the standpoint. I think it's definitely a little bit different for someone who is training for, or at least I think it's a little bit different for someone who is training for like everyday health and fitness, where all you're using there is a stimulus. And if you can get a similar stimulus with less time spent drilling perfect technique, then I think you can get more value out of the time in their training. You know, if you've got someone who's training 3 days a week for an hour, spending 45 minutes learning how to squat with a barbell is not as effective in the short to medium term. Maybe it is in the long term, as like doing some slightly easier variants of a squat that allow them to work really hard, get the desired result and move on.
Yeah, for sure. And that comes back to that conversation we had at the start about being open-minded to what this person's capabilities actually are. The interesting thing with that is like my natural tendency when I hear that is kind of to arc up a little bit. Not in a negative way. That's because
you're an angry person who needs therapy.
No, not in a negative way, but in the way that, you know, I guess it's a self-fulfilling prophecy where people come to see me to learn how to lift in a certain way. But beyond that, when I do get people who don't know about powerlifting and don't know about the fact that I'm a powerlifting coach, and like, for example, this young girl and her grandmother, they wouldn't know anything about me and powerlifting and all that sort of stuff. They just want to learn how to lift weights. So
yeah.
My natural inclination, the way I'm hardwired, is to have maybe almost too much value in squat, bench, deadlift.
Yeah.
And, you know, over time I've learned to let go of that a lot. But depending on what this person wants and depending on what you want for them is going to change the way you model your progressions as well. Mm. Like, for example, for this young girl, I do want her to be able to do a barbell squat, and she wants to be able to do a barbell squat.
Yep.
So the way that I'm running the regressions is such that when I do start putting her back under the bar, we tried it on the first session and it wasn't ready. When I do put her under the bar, back under the bar, I want her to be ready. I want the cueing that we've been running with leg press, with goblet squats, with trap bar deadlifts to make sense when she gets back under the bar to squat.
Yeah.
If the goal was never to do a low bar squat, then it would be a very different model of regression and a very different model of training.
Yeah, exactly.
So again, that comes back to the idea that if you're running these models of regression, that they have some purpose if there is eventually going to be progression.
Yes. I think that that open-mindedness is definitely something I have developed more and more over the last 4 or 5 years, because I, like almost every meathead I've ever met, found my savior in powerlifting and then preached the good word of powerlifting to everyone.
Yeah.
And that everyone should low bar squat, and that, you know, those sort of weird identity things that we attach to what are really just movements, right? And more I'm becoming fascinated by ways you can train the physiological goals that you're looking for people who are not just powerlifters. I think powerlifting's still awesome, and I'm always going to coach powerlifters while Thomas just fucks his technology right up. But yeah, I'm also training more just everyday people who, you know, like, we could spend a bunch of time learning how to squat with a barbell, and if that's what you want to do, fuck yeah, let's do it. Like, that's the goal. You should be doing it well, and it'll be great. But if it's not the thing that you want to do, then the thing that you really want to do is actually just be a bit stronger and a bit fitter and a bit healthier, then the time you spend learning, it's probably not as useful.
Yeah.
And in a similar vein, I had a discussion with a guy I'm coaching who's a competitive strongman a strongman competitor, who's had some real ongoing squat and deadlift issues with pain and stuff like that. So we've done a bit of one-on-one stuff with that, working on his squat and deadlift, and really improved his positions and his control really quickly. So I'm looking forward to him, you know, being able to train them again properly. But last night we did a session for bench, and I said, look, man, like, you don't really need to do that much benching, and you don't need to be as technically proficient in a bench, I think, as you do perhaps for a deadlift, because you're never really going to use it as a competition element, you know. So it's worthwhile being reasonably proficient. Like, we played around a little bit with how he was thinking about stabilizing his shoulders, and just gave him a bit more of a framework for, like, hey, here's what you should kind of be aiming for, but then also gave him the guidance, like, if you get 85% of the way there, it's probably fine, as long as you're not doing anything that is really likely to put you in unpleasant positions, and you're managing it reasonably well, then you're just doing it as a training stimulus. It doesn't have to be perfect in the same way. Like, I'd rather him spend that technique session drilling the shit out of his log than I would see him fucking perfect his bench press and, like, increase his bench arch and go to max league. Like, none of that is fucking useful for someone who exclusively presses overhead in a competitive environment.
Yeah. The strongman paradigm is always interesting, because you hear a lot of strongmen will say, you know, our off-season training is powerlifting training. Yeah. And it's like, what is powerlifting training? Well, powerlifting training is just general strength. It's just such that we focus our general strength using movements that happen to be specific to what our sport is.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Powerlifting is a really unique sport like that.
Yeah. I don't disagree that strongman off-season training should be quote-unquote powerlifting training, but that doesn't mean it has to involve the power lifts. Like, why can't you do high bar safety bar squats? Why can't you do log press or overhead press as your main upper body movement? Why can't you do deadlift variations as your main deadlift variation, and main deadlifting movement, for example?
And that's what I said to this guy, was, like, we were talking about squatting, and he said, oh, I did it on a safety bar, but, like, I haven't done it with safety bar for a while. I said, man, like, he trains in his garage. I said, dude, just buy a safety bar. Like, you don't have to, it doesn't have to be an expensive safety bar. But for a big, like, he's, you know, over 6 foot, he's a big dude, he's strong, he's got jacked, like, he's a jacked dude. What's the point in fucking shoving his shoulders into a compromised high bar position when you could just get the same or even potentially a better squatting stimulus by squatting with heavy with a safety bar without the beating the shit out of your joints?
Yeah,
and exactly. I think it goes both ways, right? Like, the best strongmen have a huge base of general strength that is built with the barbell of some variation, because ultimately the barbell is one of the best tools when it comes to building absolute strength. But it's about how you then transfer that into what you're doing in the competition environment.
Yeah.
I had a discussion again with a different strongman guy who competes in novice level stuff at the moment. And he's looking at, like, a 6 to sort of 7 month off-season period, because he's just been hopping between comps for the last year or so.
Yep.
And we had the discussion about, like, this is the best way to do this is to spend some time early just developing technical skill and improving your understanding of where you are. And then we just get really fucking strong. It doesn't have to be technically perfect. It needs to be pretty close so you can get the most out of the training that you're doing. In that frame, you can also then learn a lot about how your body moves and how it responds to external stimulus, which you can then carry over to the strongman lifts. But I don't think you need to do competition movements year round necessarily. It really depends on the level of the lifter and how experienced they are. But I think there's definitely an argument for both ends of that spectrum.
For sure. I kind of look like that idea you were talking about earlier around, like, do you even need to do that main movement? Kind of look at like swimming. A couple of years ago, I've in my adult years somehow developed some massive anxiety for being in the water. I was never good at swimming to begin with, and I didn't know how to do any strokes. So I decided to go start watching YouTube videos and teach myself how to swim. And it was a twofold thing. I wanted to get past this water anxiety, but I also wanted to do swimming as cardio. And by the time I learned how to swim confidently enough to, you know, swim a lap, I realized I was wasting so much energy with my poor technique and lack of practice, and that it would take me so long to actually get a valuable cardio effect from swimming.
Yeah.
Because I'd swim two laps and I'd be fucked because my technique was sloppy. I wasn't breathing efficiently, all that sort of stuff. Like, there would have been
the buoyancy of a large brick.
Well, that too. There would have had to be so much underlying skill work for me to actually garner the effect of what I was trying to achieve. And it's very similar to, like, if you can't perform, if you're brand new and you can't perform a squat properly, there's no sense in me giving you like 5 sets of 10 or 6 sets of 8 or something on squats, because you're not going to be articulate at being... You're not going to be able to articulate the strength that you truly have because you don't have the skill yet. So I'd rather give you less sets and smash you with just accessories while you continue to hone that skill in.
Yeah, man. It's the trade-off between the skill demand of an exercise and your ability to output force, which I think is a really interesting discussion when you get into the weeds about it, because it then it's definitely like that idea has definitely changed how I program for... especially for early intermediate, like beginner intermediate people who are like relatively proficient, but definitely still need some skill work.
Mm.
But also then, like, if they're not right before a comp, I just want you to work fucking hard and I want you to get stronger. And so I've been using way more things like belt squats and sandbag squats and trap bar deadlifts and things like that, that are just one or two steps below the sort of main lifts as a technical demand, from a technical demand standpoint, that then just allows them to work really fucking hard. And I think there's a lot of value in that, as long as, like we've said before, you know how to then apply it to the other end of the spectrum. I think if you just mindlessly thrash yourself with that volume, it's not going to be very beneficial. But if you do it in a way that's like, hey, I'm trying to make the connection between how I belt squat and how I low bar squat, well, then I think you can get a lot out of it.
For sure.
I have a similar sort of view on like the Olympic lifts. I had a discussion with someone the other day who asked if we do much around Olympic weightlifting stuff. And you know, my opinion is always no, not really. Like, I can kind of show you the basics. I know enough about weightlifting to be able to give you some guidance, but I'm not a weightlifting coach. Because for most people, I don't think it's valuable unless you're planning. Like with anything, if it's something you want to do or you want to compete in it, fuck yeah, it has heaps of value. For anyone other than that, I think you can get the same effect or very similar effects from simpler movements that allow you to just work harder at it. Creating buy-in for someone when they want to learn to snatch, and what you're actually going to do is have them spend 6 months snatching no more than an empty barbell, is a bit harder than, you know, giving someone a trap bar deadlift and helping them work really fucking hard for a little while and actually see measurable progress.
For sure.
So yeah.
Man, I think at the risk of continuing to have the same conversation with different lifts.
Yes.
I've said all I want to say on that.
Yeah, man. I think that worked out well.
That was good.
Yes.
We're pretty good when we get going.
For the most part, I like to think we are.
If you think we are, give us 5 stars.
Put it on Instagram. If you don't think we are, just give us 5 stars anyway, because we're good people.
That's right.
But also, I said to someone the other day who mentioned they were enjoying the podcast, if there's things you want us to talk about, like, send us messages, let us know. We're not always very good at coming up with topics.
No, John's lying. We're fine.
That's because I do all the fucking work.
If you do have any ideas, please.
To clarify, this episode goes in the John category because I came up with this one again.
Oh, well done. You're at 3 for 60.
Sweet. One day we're going to do an episode where we tally this shit up and you're going to lose.
Probably. Okay.
That's it.
That's it. Find us, follow us, love us.